as the Navi Zechariah says, that we look forward to the time when all fast days will become days of great joy. And so we look forward that our Summer of Davis someday will be a great Yom Tov together with Shavuos and Matanos and Tisha B'Av and Tzom Gedalia and Tainus Esther. A word of introduction to the Shia. Maybe it's a story of introduction. The story appears a number of places. There were two giants that stood at the head of the yeshiva in Voloshin. I'm talking about Talmudic giants. They were the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, and Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik the First, great-grandfather of the Chol. We're talking now about this story is going to be the 1857.
My grandfather
learned
with him.
Your grandfather learned. Okay, so we have our connection to history here. There were problems that developed between the two, not per problems of a personal nature, of approaches to education. We're talking about two great people with two varying approaches to the study of Torah, to education. And things reached, unfortunately, such a point that it had to come to a Din Torah. And the Din Torah was conducted by some of the giants. There was the Chov of Slutsk, one of the great rabbis of the time, Rabbi Yosef Feiner. There was a young, up-and-coming rabbi, Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan Spector, who at the time was the Chov of Nevardik, and Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan was going to be the great posek of the 19th century in Europe. There was Rabbi David Tevel of Minsk. Rabbi David Tevel was the one who wrote Svarim Nachlas David on many Masechtos Hashas. We're talking about very, very big people. Very big people. And there was also the fourth member of this group that was going to adjudicate the differences between the Netziv and Yosef Ber Halevi Soloveitchik, was Rav Velvel, who was the Maggid of Vilna. Rav Velvel is the one who introduced the proceedings. It was sometime in the month of Cheshvan, and he says, my job is to be a Maggid, and a Maggid always has to talk about the Parashat HaShavua. But I'm going to talk about a different Parasha now. He says, I feel it's Parashat Vayeshev. It was someplace back there in Lech Lecha or Vayecha. And here it is, we're talking about what most probably was an august, very, very serious gathering. I would imagine it was one of those gatherings where you could cut the tension with a knife. And he says, I, Maggid, who always talk about Parashat HaShavua, it's Parashat Vayeshev now. And then, of course, he proceeded to explain. And he says, you go through the parashas of the Torah, two Vayeshev, things are pretty clear-cut. Pretty clear-cut. You know who's the good guy, and you know who's the bad guy. You know who's good, and who's evil. You have the first man and the serpent, Adam and the Nachash. Cain and Hevel, no problem. We know exactly who's good, who's bad. You come to Parshas Noach, so you have on one hand Noach, then you have the rest of the world that's become corrupt, absolutely corrupt. We have absolutely no difficulty. There's no confusion. There's no moral equivalency of any sort. No problem. You come into Lech Lecha, so you have Avraham against the four kings. No problem. We know who's good, we know who's bad. You come into Vayera, then you have Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yitzchak and Yishmael. We have any problems over here? It will be Yitzchak's children 4,000 years later that may have difficulty figuring out who's right and who's wrong. But we have no difficulty. You come into Vayera, so it's whoever you want to call it, it's still Yitzchak and Yishmael, and you have Eliezer and Lavan. We know who's okay and who isn't okay. Parshas told us, all does it become very clear. Yaakov and Esav. We have no doubts whatsoever who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. In Parshas Vayetzei, you're going to have Yaakov and Lavan, the great confrontation upon the hills of Gilad. And then in Vayishlach again, you're going to have Yaakov and Esav marching toward each other. Everything's been clear-cut. There are no blurred lines, no difficulty of vision. Boy, but when you come to Parshat Vayeshev, it's Yosef and his brothers. No clear lines. There's no good guy. There's no bad guy. There's no evil and good. This is a struggle between two world views. Brothers who are locked in struggle. This is not the kind of confrontation where we can say, well, you know, I think he's right there. I think he's wrong. They did this, that was terrible. They did something that was terrible. Here, we have to approach it with a great deal of fear and trepidation, because there are two giants. Yosef and his brothers represent two world views. And therefore, Zehirot, careful. So he said, it's the Netziv and the Beis HaLevi. We're not coming here to a Din Torah where the end is going to be. This one is our gangster, our hooligan, and this one is our tzaddik. This one is dead wrong, and that one is, what are you talking about there? Angelic, all right. We're dealing with something over here where there are two major world views, and we're going to have to take out the truth of each one. That's how we, in view of this story, I believe that that's always the way we have to view all the parasha from Vayeshev. All the parasha from Vayeshev. The difference of it that it makes is, and I think I once mentioned that in the world of the study of Tanakh in this country, there are two approaches. One is called the approach of Gova Einayim. There are those who say, Gova Einayim means I'm supposed to, or I have the right to look at the great of Tanakh from my eye level, how I see it. I don't ascribe to that approach. Because then it means then that all of my Mishigasim I can read into Yaakov, all of my, or your, Narangman, your psychological illnesses, we're going to find in the brothers, and we're going to start dissecting giants who are the fathers of the Jewish people as though, they're a bunch of little yingalach in the street. You can't do that. You have to approach Yosef and his brothers with fear and with trembling and with shuddering. Okay, that's all. Because I will give you an example of something that I had thought of saying and then I just rejected it. Then there are other things that I thought of that I didn't reject at all. And I'm going to share that with you as well. Now that we got the story, which is the introduction, we got that out of the way, now we can take our sheets. And so my biggest problem last night was how to number them, where to start. I don't know where to start. It's going to take, we're going to go through Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayikash, and Vayichin. So I must stop someplace. Start someplace before I can stop someplace. So, all right, let's do one. The very end of the Bereshis. Vayoshav Yosef Mitzrayim, number one. Yosef returned to Egypt. Hu ve'echav, he and his brothers, v'chol ha'olun, he told k'vor et aviv, achareim kavro et aviv. After they had buried, they had all been in Eretz Yisrael to bury Yaakov. They all are now returning from having gone up to Eretz Yisrael to bury their father. Vayiru achei Yosef, ki meit aviyam, the brothers of Yosef saw that their father was dead. Vayomru, and they said, Lu yistumenu Yosef. All of a sudden, Lu yistumenu Yosef. Maybe Yosef will hate us. V'hashem, the word yistumenu, by the way, is a word that immediately triggers an association. After Yaakov steals, in quotation marks, the blessings from Esav, so the pasuk says, Vayistom Esav. Esav hated an inner hatred. And the brothers are now concerned when they come back to Mitzrayim. The father has already been buried. Maybe Yosef will hate us. V'ashev yashiv lanu, and now he's going to return to upon us at kol ha'ro'a she'gomalo ato, all the evil that we did with him. Now we're going to get it. In a period of 17 years that Yaakov was alive with them in the land of Mitzrayim, I begin to feel that the association to Esav is even more horrible or painful, because Esav over there said, I'm going to wait until my father dies, and then I'm going to go after my brother. So here it is, the brothers, they've been all living together for 17 years in Mitzrayim, the father is dead, and now, they are terrified. By Yitzchak and Yosef Lamor, they commanded Yosef, saying, they made it up. They made up a story. Your father commanded before his death, so saying, this is what you should say to Yosef. Now, I'm not going to deal with a lot of the textual and other problems in this section. I mean, if Yaakov really would have commanded, why didn't he say it directly to Yosef before he died? And he told it to the brothers, to tell Yosef, there's something here that doesn't sit right at all. And of course, all the Mepharshim talk about the fact that they are saying an untruth, you know, so an untruth in order to keep the peace of the family can be legitimate. Anyway, they tell him that your father commanded before he died, saying, Ko tamu to Yosef, this is what you should say to Yosef, Ona son, O pesha achecha, please forgive the sin of your brothers, the chatosom, kichorg, malucha, and their evil, because they really did bad things to you. Vato sono, le pesha avde elehe avicha, forgive the crime, the chait, the avon of my servants, the God of your father. Vayef Yosef v'dat avilo. Yosef cried when they spoke to him. By the way, Yosef has cried more than anybody else in all of Sefer Bereshis. We're going to come to a number of other places. He cries when they come to him the first time to buy food. He cries when he sees Binyamin. He cries when he reveals himself. He cries. Christ. Maybe he got it from his mother. Maybe he got it just when he meets his father. I mean, he cries.
He's emotional.
I'll say that's it. So he's emotional. Okay. So now we have now tagged Yosef for 4,000 years. We know exactly what he is. He's just, you know, maybe he's a little over emotional. Maybe a little therapy will go a long way to help him out.
Okay. Okay.
He cries. He cries. And then it says, "Vayelchu kam echo vayitlu lefonav." It says that his brothers went and they fell before him and they said, "Hinenu lechol avodim, we are slaves unto you." I mean, this is the way Sefer Bereishis is going down. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible ending. Vayomer aleihem Yosef. Yosef said to them, "Al tiro, don't be afraid. Ki tachat Elohim ani, am I in the place of God? You think I run the world over here? I'm the one." He has to convince them again that what he had told them, when he revealed himself to them, that God sent me here. He wanted me to be here in place so that I would be able to provide for you and take care of you. This is all part of a divine plan. You know where else we heard this in Sefer Bereishis? When his mother Rachel says to Yaakov, "Hovoli banim, give me children, be an ayin, and if not, meson ochiang dead." It says by Yichar, af Yaakov berachel, Yaakov gets angry with Rachel and he says, "Atachet elokim anochi, am I in the place of God? Am I in the place of God?" Yosef now is saying it in a completely different way, with a different niggun. He's saying it not in a form of mockery, but "Oh my God, v'atem chashavtem alayich, oh, you thought you wanted to do something bad to me, but Elokim chashav al tova, God considered it something good, l'man asav kayom hazel l'ach yosam chav, in order to do today and keep a mighty nation alive. And now, atal tiro, don't be afraid, anochi achal keletchem, I will provide for you, v'tatkan for your children, v'yinachem otam, v'yidaber al libam." He consoled them, and he spoke to their heart. It didn't say that when Yosef revealed himself to his brothers. Now, the last thing we hear, v'yidaber al libam, I think these three words describe the end of the story. He finally knew what it was that he had to do, and he did it, and he spoke to their hearts. He spoke to their hearts. He spoke in such a way that he finally convinced them indeed and in fact that there isn't a shred of hatred in his heart. Now, so here I'll just give you an example of how I would have, off the cuff, I would have said, watch my psychology. It's not bad, by the way. It's not bad. The pasuk said, second pasuk we read, "Vayiru achei Yosef," the brothers of Yosef saw that their father died, "Vayom," and they said, "Lu yistameinu Yosef." How would you really translate "Lu yistameinu Yosef"?
Perhaps.
Lou Yehi. Lou Yehi. I mean, I sing all the time, and that's for all of those people who don't hear my songs on radio called Chai. So, Lou Yehi. The word Lou, of course. By the way, there is a song that I composed that's being played on radio called Chai, and it was on this morning. I never heard it, but we have somebody who did. Lorraine heard it, okay. And so you heard it? Okay, it's pretty good, huh? Good, okay.
Did you
compose? Lu Yehi, the song Lu Yehi. Yes, I compose, that's right. I not only make up shiurim, I do a lot of other things. Okay, Lu Yehi, if only. Doesn't the word Lu mean something that you would want to happen? Watch. What word should they have used here? If they're frightened that he might hate them, they should have said pen, lest he hates. The Mepharshim made a similar comment when Avram sends Eliezer to find a wife for Yitzchak. So he says, "Ulay lo tove ha'isha Maybe the woman won't want to go with me. And unfortunately, they zero in on that line. A line means that's what you would like to happen. He should have said, Pen, what am I going to do, never, if the girl doesn't want to follow? So Rashi over there says that he had a daughter, okay? And, you know, he was hoping that his daughter would become the wife of Yitzhak. So over here, amateur psychologist that I am, I would have said, you know what the brothers really needed? You know what they would have loved? If Yosef once and for all would open up and pour out all his anger, get it out of his kishkes, tell us exactly how he feels about us. They would have felt better. Isn't there some kind of psychology like that? Let it all hang out. Yeah, you know.
That would absolve them of their guilt.
Right. Yeah, well, let's say it would be, let's use another pseudo-psychology. It would be closure. We caused him pain, now he gives us a psalm, you understand? And in this great paroxysm of anger, finally.
We understand.
We deserve that. You know, you feel like purge. I did something bad. And I deserve, very good. So that means I'm now psychoanalyzing the brothers that they walk, they're walking around wrecked with all of this guilt. They need somebody pushing to kasher them inside a hagola. You're yelling and screaming at them. Oh, God. That was, by the way, that would be not a bad shot on them.
That would be
true. So I want to learn a Rashi with you. Lo yistamenu. You have it there, number three. It's right down there. This means Shemo Yistamenu. Perhaps he will nurse hatred against us. This nurse. Perhaps he will hate us. Perhaps. Do you hear how she says it? The way I want to translate it, Lou would mean, if only. If only. But we'd love to have him hate us. No, Rashi says Shema. And then Rashi sets us straight. Lu mitchalek li inyanim harbe. The word lu separates into many meanings. Yesh lu mishamesh lashon bilishon bakasha. Rashi probably knows this is the first thing somebody would want to say. The word lu can mean please. There is the usage of lu which functions as an expression of a wish. Lashon halavai, if only. That's what the great psychologist over here wants. That's how he wanted to translate it. It means if only. Kigon, lu yi kidvorecha. If only it will be like, as you say. Lu shmoeni. Avram says to Ephraim, if only it listened to me, I want to pay in full for the. Velu ho'alnu. This is in Yahushua. What a statement. After they lost the first battle, after they entered Eretz Yisrael, the first battle they lose is the Battle of Ai. So it says that Yahushua tears his garments, he prostrates himself before God, and he says, God Almighty, why did we come into Eretz Yisrael? Veluho alnu, if only we would have wanted, we would have remained outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now we've lost the battle, we're going to be surrounded by all of these enemies. The version gets a hold of Yeshua and says, get up, stand up, come on. There's a lot to be done. There's a great deal to be done. Don't worry. It isn't all lost. Blue Masnu. Doesn't Abiram say, if only we would have died in Mitzrayim or with our brothers. If only we had died. V'yesh lu mishamesh b'lishon im v'ulat. And there is a usage of lu which functions as an expression of if or maybe. K'gon lu chochmu yaskilu zot. If only if they had been wise. Lu hikshachto l'mitzotai. If you would have paid attention to my commandments. V'lu anochi shokel akapi. If I would have weighed out upon my palms. V'yesh lu mishamesh. It means perhaps, maybe. Now watch this. This is what blows my mind in the Rashi. the usage of lo that Rashi is going to say applies over here, then it means lo yistameinu, maybe, not if only. Rashi goes on to say, and there is usually a response of that of perhaps Joseph will nurse hatred. Ve'ein lo od domeh b'mikra. There is no other word example of this in scripture. Do you understand what Rashi is telling us? The way I'm explaining the word lo here, I have no other proof for it. You know what it sounds like? Rashi's telling me, you better learn lo the way I'm telling you to learn it. What a strange thing. No, it's here, because Rashi says it, so all my psychological Torah, you understand, is going out the window. He has all sorts of psukim where lu means if only. He brought 5 or 6 psukim for lu being if only. And when he comes to the pshat that he says on the lu over here, there is nothing else like it. He's honest, he's open, he's forthright, he's straight. And it means Shema, perhaps. And he doesn't even justify it. So what do I have to do? I have to understand what Rashi's talking about. I think that Rashi felt that he can't read the rest of the pasuk. If he would have read lu as meaning if only. For Hoshev Yoshiv Longo as Hakol Havor Asher Gomalnu also. They don't really want that. They don't want that he should do to them what they did to him. It can't mean that. Rashi, looking at the context of the pasuk in its totality, says, this lu has to mean something else. It means Shema, maybe. And therefore Rashi is telling you, forget all of your attempted psychoanalysis of the brothers. And you know what? I love the idea of bending before the great wisdom of Rabban Shel Kol Yisrael Rashi. Within the context of the pasuk, it can't be. Nobody would want that they should do to them everything that they did to somebody else. They don't in their wildest dreams want that they should be sold into slavery someplace. Lo papa cheshbon. So therefore the lu can't mean, oh, if only he will do to us what we did to him. Can't be. It's like Ben before Rashi. Now this is all an introduction to something else that's going to take us through all of these parsha. Turn over. By the way, if all that we've learned over here is before you go off the deep end and start saying all of your own pshatim, before you go there einayim, look at it straight, shoot for the hip. Learn Rashi. The whole shiur really is based on number 5. The 5 is the Shem Yishmuel. Shem Yishmuel is a set of 5 svarim that was written by the son of the Avnei Nezer, the Sochach of Rebbe. And it's chassidish, it's brilliant, it's gevaldik. I don't know how to describe the Shem Yishmuel. After many years that it was not available, it was reprinted by a yid called Avon Parshan. Okay. When we davened over there in the... over there, yeah, okay. By the revelation, last week, Sefer, Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. We have it in number 4. I'll just take you to the pasuk. First two psukim. Yehuda says, Eich ele el ovi, how can I go to my father, my mother, and anyway, tea, and the boy isn't with me? Pen ere bero, lest I see the evil that's going to find my father. This is the end of his great plea. I can't go back without the boy. I'm going to stay in his place. Here, Yosef hears this great, great plea for Binyamin, and he's deeply moved. Lo yachol Yosef lehit hapeh. Yosef could not control himself. Lechol hanitzavim alav, in the presence of all who were standing there. Vayikra, and he called out, Hotziu kol ish me'olai. This is the most dramatic moment, and here I think most probably I can say, certainly in all of biblical literature, it's most probably one of the great moments in all of literature. Yosef revealing himself to his brothers. I mean, the shock, the surprise, the turn of events is so shaking. I mean, fiction could never come up with something as great and as powerful as this. And he cries out, remove everybody from the form evil. Nobody stood with him, when Yosef revealed himself to his brothers. He cries, Egypt heard, and the house of Paro heard, and Yosef said to his brothers, Ani Yosef. Shockwaves. You can't imagine. The Shem Yishmuel asks a very interesting question. We most probably never looked at it this way. I think that we've lived for many years with the idea Yosef was bringing them step by step to this point. He orchestrated it, directed by, and then this is Yosef Productions. He's bringing them to the moment, the peak moment. Okay? Kara, shoot, Ani Yosef, explosion. It's not so. V'lo Yachol, the Shem Yishmuel asks, it says that Yosef couldn't control himself, and therefore he bursted out with Ani Yosef. So the Shem Yishmuel asks, what was he waiting for anyway? What do you mean he? Because he couldn't control himself, he now reveals himself to his brothers. I mean, what else did he want? Did he want them dangling in the wind for who knows how long? Till when? Till what moment? And every moment that passes that his father doesn't know that he's alive, this is terrible, terrible pain. What does Yosef want to do? How long does he want to dream this out? And it's only because Lo Yachol Yosef lit hapeh. He couldn't control himself. So there, the game, in other words, the whole script, as he had it written out, he has to tear up the rest of the script and throw it away, because he's now going to reveal himself, because he just has no choice. But this was not what he had in mind. Let's read that little Shem Yishmuel. V'nida, v'nektiv, it says, V'lo yachol yosef l'tapeg, mashver, that means, Shimhoye yachol l'tapeg, hayam l'tapeg, if he could have controlled himself, he would have controlled himself even more. Either he would wait until all of them would leave, or who knows, whatever other moment he'll decide. It means that there was some kind of a benefit in his waiting, delaying his revealing himself. Because if there would be no benefit, he would not have caused his brothers the pain. After he sees how they're ready to give their lives for Binyamin, here's the terrible pain of his father, who's worried about Binyamin, worried about Yosef, worried about everybody. What was he waiting for? Why does this revelation that we may have always thought came at the precise moment that Yosef chose? No, the whole thing was a mistake. He didn't want it to happen. Why didn't he want it to happen? What's he waiting for anyway? The whole day, every minute is like a year. And even if he could have controlled himself, he would also have to remove everybody. What's happened over here? What's happening? What more did he want? What more did he want? So I'll tell you, the Shem Yishmuel gives a long answer. And I can say the words, but it takes us into the world of Chassidut and Kabbalah. they still had to be a little bit of a process of tshuva, and I can't say it. It's very difficult, very difficult. It's beyond the ken of our ability to comprehend. I saw one other place where they tried to explain it with a sentence from Rav Kook, and believe me, I didn't understand that either. So I was left to my own devices. And two things occurred to me, and that's what I want to share with you. One is simple, one may be a little bit less simple, and that other one may very well be moving into the area of amateur psychologists. So I want to tell you that what I have in the back of my mind is everything that I said at the beginning of this year. I think that Yosef didn't want to shock his brothers. Didn't want that. He did not want it to happen the way it happened. That was the last thing in the world that he wanted. He may have wanted to drop certain hints. He may have wanted to soften the blow. He doesn't want to shock his brothers, because he's afraid that that's going to leave an impression for a long time to come. You don't recover from that very, very quickly. He doesn't want anything that's going to stand in the way of rebuilding the brotherhood. This kind of a shock, all of a sudden, he's Yosef. Believe me, you have to have a strong heart to go through a shock of that sort. He doesn't want the great moment in all of literature. He doesn't want it to happen. He wants to be able to ease them into it. He wants to create an atmosphere in which it will sort of come a great deal more naturally. He doesn't want this. They'll forever remember that moment of shock, every moment that they live in their lives. Doesn't want that. By the way, he may have been right. That may be the reason why 17 years later, his brothers come back from the Levaya of the father, and they say, maybe Yosef is going to hate us, and now he's going to repay us. Because they still remember the moment of the terrible, terrible shock. Ani Yosef. They must hear it in their minds. Ani Yosef. He doesn't want that. And that's why at the end then, it says, Vayidaber al libam, he spoke to their hearts. It's most probably something that he couldn't do during all of these 17 years, because he had to wait till the moment that they would get over the trauma of this news. The unexpected. I'll tell you the truth. Do you know when I started thinking of this? Believe me, I swore off television a long time ago. And even when I was watching, I only watched the news till the news got me sick. It always gets me sick. Went back to TV for the few days of the disengagement, the gihush, and I was probably cried for 3 days straight. I don't think I ever cried as much in my life. For some reason, I don't know why, but on Wednesday night about 12 o'clock, we turn on the TV, we see Hadassah and Karen on the whole day. They've been telling us that the Prime Minister is going to be brought in tomorrow morning to go through the Tzintur. We knew exactly who was going to do it, how long, this, that. Something's wrong. What's going on over there? Till it finally dawned that no, something happened the night before, something very serious. Everybody reacts to the shock. I mean, it's shocking news, regardless of what one's feelings about the Prime Minister. For everybody, it was sort of the unexpected. the unexpected. So my wife, of course, reminds me all the time that there's a great man who always says, in modern Jewish history, you have to expect the unexpected. She meant me, of course. It's unexpected. There's something about the unexpected. Maybe you call it the shocking. The unexpected, that you lose a sense of a balance. You can't figure out what's happening over here. And what are going to be the results of this? What's this going to mean for me, for you, for everybody else? You know, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Yosef doesn't want to shock his brothers, because the shock may leave a residue of unhappiness and distance between them for many, many years to come. And therefore, the only way he's able to do this, the way he has a plan, if you want the script, he's going to ease them into it. He's going to ease them into it. And watch. He's going to ease them into it. Therefore, this is completely out of the script. This is not the script. And therefore, Yosef couldn't control himself, and therefore he blurts it out on Yosef. But there's a second. There's a second idea that I want to express. And here already I'm moving into the murky world of psychology, except that it's not finding fault with anybody. I'm not going to find fault with somebody that they're a little sick or something's wrong with them. Do you know what I think Yosef craved more than anything else? I'll say it straight. They don't recognize me! My own brothers don't recognize me! So the Eibishter Rabbi, are they that distant from me? And I know what you're all thinking. I know what you're all thinking. Ah! When he left, he didn't have a beard. And now he has a beard. Okay, Father Kateritz. And by the way, Rashi had said it. I don't think Rashi ever meant that's why they don't recognize him over weeks, months, hours that they're schmoozing with one another. This man has become the most important person in their lives. His voice, his mannerisms, and I'm going to give you the best. Rashi, and I have all the Rashis here, so nobody can dispute me. Rashi, at the beginning of Parashat Vayeshev, said, Ela told us Yaakov, these are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef. So Rashi says, why is Yosef called the generations of Yaakov? Because whatever happened to Yaakov happened to Yosef. This one was hated, this one was hated. And Rashi goes through a whole litany, and he only takes part of the message. And then he says another pshat. You know why Yosef was the generations of Yaakov? Because they looked alike. Shoyoziv ikunim of Yosef. The face of Yosef was like the face of Yaakov. Did they ever see Yaakov with a beard? What do you mean? Because he has a beard, they can't recognize him. That may be true for the first moment. Here are these 11 fellows standing in front of Tzofnat Paneah. So the pasuk says, "Vayakev Yosef Esechov." Yosef recognized his brothers, the Hain Lo Hi Ki Ruhu, and he didn't recognize them. And Rashi said, they didn't recognize him. Good. They didn't recognize him. So Rashi says that, well, they didn't recognize him. I thought I had the Rashi, but Zara, you trust me anyway. When he left, he didn't have a beard. Now he has a beard, they don't recognize him. And then Rashi says another pasuk, nobody will name the second pasuk. Vayaki Yosef Ezechov, Yosef dealt with them as a brother when he met up with them. They didn't recognize him as a brother when they met up with him out in the field over there. Do You know what Yosef wants more than anything else? He wants that they should recognize him as a brother. How distant have you become from me? You know what Yosef is doing all the way through Parashat Miketz? He's dropping hints. He invites them to dinner. And do you know how they're seated by the dinner? The Pasuk says it really. They're seated by the dinner. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zebulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad. They have little place cards over there. Understand? And the Pasuk says that they're wondering to themselves. This is pretty funny. We're all seated. And Rashi even at one point also says that they started wondering to themselves, you know, we came to buy grain. The fellows asked us about our father, do we have a brother? He wants to see the brother. What's going on? He's not sending messages. He's hitting them over the head. After all the terrible times they go through, they come back home, and everybody has all his money back in his sack. Out comes the grain, out comes the money. He wants, if they can recognize him, then he has a feeling that there may be a hope for this brother. Even when they don't recognize him. The fact is, I've talked myself so much into how good the question I'm asking is, I totally don't understand. How did they recognize him? How did they recognize him? You know what Yosef is waiting? You know why he doesn't want to reveal himself in this great burst of great emotion at this peak moment? I mean, Yosef. Never wanted that. You know what he wanted? Not that he should reveal himself to them. They should reveal him. Not me, Yosef. They wanted, I told you, you're Yosef. You're Yosef. Cut this Safnas Paner stuff. You're a little Jew from our house. You grew up with us. He craves that more than anything else. The one who speaks about Achva, when he reveals himself, after the first burst of Ani Yosef, it says after that, Vayomer Yosef el Echov, Yosef said to his, because it says, take a look, Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Yosef el Echov, Ani Yosef, how old are you, Chai? Is my father yet alive? The Lo Yachlu Echov Lanoso, so his brothers couldn't answer him, King Yivhalumi Pana, because they trembled with way. That's exactly what he didn't want to happen. He didn't want that. And therefore, he understands that he's going to have to start a process now that he hoped he would never need. Vayomer Yosef el Echov, Kishunoi, like, please come close. Vayikshu, Vayomer, Ani Yosef Achicha. That's what he wanted. He wants to rebuild the Ahava. He wants to rebuild the brotherhood. He's not going to succeed in doing it by this great surprise that to them is going to be such a cruel and shocking moment in their lives, never to be forgotten. It may be good in literature. It may be good as, an unbelievable moment. But it's not good for brotherhood. And Yosef is interested in only one thing. He knows that he has to begin to rebuild a relationship with his brothers from the bottom up. And the fact is, as we see now at the end of Parshat Vayechi, it's going to take 17 years. And it's only going to happen when he speaks to their hearts. You think he doesn't want to do that now? He wants to do it now. But he can't do it now. The shock is that great. Now is not the time, the Tafer Ali time. The time to come to speak to their hearts and rebuild it. You know what? You know what it really means? The last three words of the story in all of Torah, Vayitaber al libam. That's the real end of the story. There couldn't have been a better end to the story. It all had to wait for that. It might have happened earlier if Joseph would have been able to control himself, but he couldn't. He has a weakness. That's right, I don't like that. Weakness, and the apostle says it. He didn't want it this way at all. I think it puts a whole, to me anyway, I mean, first of all, it put a whole new look on the whole story. It certainly is not the way we may have thought, that this is all planned and so calculated, and just at the right moment when it will have the most powerful impact, that's the moment at which he goes in for the Ani Yosef. He most probably gets up in a cold sweat at night many years after that. Why couldn't I control myself? It set me back 17 years. Because there was this undercurrent, the Ani Yosef undercurrent, the Ani Yosef that caused them to tremble before him. He didn't want them trembling before him. He wanted them loving him. That's what he wanted. He wanted Achva. I have a little proof, Allah, that what I'm saying is correct. Number 8. Down at the bottom, that number 8 was really said it about 15, 20 years ago as part of a greater shiur that I cannot go into now. The Ramban deals with a question about which, we can talk for hours. Did Yaakov ever find out the truth? Did Yaakov ever find out the truth that the brothers sold Yosef to Egypt into slavery? Did they ever find out the truth? And there are different approaches. The Ramban has a unique approach. What he says over there, what you can't read. He says, Yirali, it seems to me, al derech hapshat. It seems to me, al derech hapshat, shelo hugav li Yaakov kol yomav. Nobody ever told Yaakov in his lifetime. Next line, ki echov mokru es Yosef, that the brothers sold Yosef. So what did he think? The Ramban says, avo chashav, you know what he thought? He thought it was his fault. I sent him to find out about his brothers in Shechem. But then when he questions them later, he finds out they weren't in Shechem at all. They were in Dothan. Ah! I sent him to the wrong place and he got lost in the field looking for you and he was torn apart by a wild animal. If I would have known you were in Dothan, I would have told him to go to Dothan, but I didn't do that. I will crush out ki hayotoma besada that he wandered in the field, and those who found him took him and sold him to Mitzchayim. Now he knows that those people who found him in the field, or didn't fix it, or sold him to Mitzchayim. Now the Ramban gives us why it has to be this way. Because the Ramban decides there isn't a soul who would dare tell Yaakov. He says, what the brothers are going to say, Pa, you ain't running out of truth. You know, First he thought that a wild beast tore him up. And now he must be thinking, who knows what happened. You want to run out of truth, I'll tell you the truth. We sold Yosef. The Ramban says, we should. Prophets would never have said it. Ki ochav lo ratzu l'hagi lo katosom, the brothers didn't want to tell him their sin. They were terrified of their lives. He may get angry and curse them. Just as he does in this week's Seder to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Listen to the next line. Yosef b'musaro hatov lo ratzo hagid lo. Yosef is a moral individual. His goodness. not even possible to imagine Yosef walking over and say, Pa, what did you think all these years, Pa? What do you think? I mean, you think you got yourself a bunch of Kachatsky walk over here, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. This one knows Shas, that one's a big bald stock. Do you think you got, you know, you got a bunch over here? You got a lot, 10 fellas who sold their brother off into slavery. And one says, no, no, Yosef would never have done that. Yosef bin Musaro HaTov, his morality, his goodness, would never have done it. V'lakach ne'emar, therefore the Ramban says, v'yitzav le'Yosef le'emor, the psukim that we now have at the end of Ayichim, Avichav Sivul Lefnei Moso Lemar, your father commanded before his death. So the Ramban says, would Yaakov have known that they sold him into slavery? Yaakov would have told Yosef directly, Harachmanes on your brothers. Il yada Yaakov bein azeh hayoroi lehem sheyichalu pnei avi, or that they should beg of their father before he dies with Savot and Yosef Pipiv. You tell Yosef. Because he knew that Yosef would listen to whatever Yaakov says. If they would have gotten Yaakov to speak to Yosef, they wouldn't feel that they're in grave danger. They wouldn't have to lie, make up all sorts of things. The Ramban says, Yosef, b'musaro hatov. This is a moral and an ethical individual. This is a man that the Lukim Ani Yarei, I fear God. Yosef never wanted to reveal himself in a way that his brothers would tremble before him. For two reasons, I say. One is because Musaro HaTov, he does not want them to suffer that shock. And number two, he craves more than anything else that they reveal him, that they're able to say, Yosef, you're our brother, Yosef. So it's going to have to wait, starts in Vayeshev, until those very last psukim, Vayedaber al Libam. He had to do it, and he did. I spoke about what?
The brothers had a terrible shock.
Yes.
They
had a shock, but I think they soon recovered because they don't think they believed it. How did this great man, the second greatest man in Egypt, be Yosef?
Made it the first time. The first reaction of being told something like this would be get this silly,
can't
possibly
be
Yosef. How would this great
man in Egypt even know that they had a brother called Yosef?
Another thing, he had to prove it later.
No,
there
was no first thing.
They didn't believe it.
Huh?
They didn't believe it.
Well, you have to prove that to me from a There isn't a single word in any pasuk that you can use to prove that thesis. You're going to need some shock in order to come up with it.